So hey everybody, welcome back to Voices from the Frontlines on KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, streaming live on the web at the terrific kpfk.org. And we do have a lot of people now around the country listening to us live on the web, which is very cool, which means 7 o'clock in Manhattan or Brooklyn or any place on the East Coast, and you could work backwards from Chicago in the Midwest, and then there's Denver and L.A. So there are people all over the country listening to it. We're getting emails from all over the world, and the emails mean a lot. I think that's still the arena that I operate best on, eric@voicesfromthefrontlines.com. Between my articles in Counterpunch and the great honor of doing this show, I've been getting a lot of emails, and I'm actually answering them. So it matters a lot to tell me that you're out there, to let our team know that you're out there, to have opinions on what you're listening to, and we'd love to hear from you. You can also, as I said, tweet me at ericmanspeaks. So the next thing I want to do, and I appreciate that a lot of you like that I do reading of other people's work. I certainly appreciate it. And Nadine Gordimer is somebody who I should have been reading many, many, many decades ago. But life always has new adventures. And for some of you, of course, do know who she is, but it says here, faultless novelistic art only equaled in our time by such masters as Graham Greene and V.S. Nepal. And then someone else wrote, Nadine Gordimer is a great writer. It is Turgenev she most reminds me of, which is Conor Cruz O'Brien in the New York Times. So what I want to read to you, and I think what I'm really enjoying about this book, is on one level, her level of political development about communism, socialism, national liberation strategies, her real grasp of what a social movement is about is way up there. I mean, she's quite sophisticated and got great politics, too. Also, of course, she's a very experimental writer, uses a lot of interesting stuff about language. So I'm both enjoying it as a poem and as a polemic at the same time. The book is called Berger's Daughter, and it's about Rosa Berger, who is a young woman who grows up in South Africa. She's white, she's Afrikaner, and her father is white, is a member of the African National Congress. He's also a member of the South African Communist Party, a wonderful organization that's done such great work. So in the section that I'm about to read you, she's about to go to the last day of his trial, where he's been on trial for treason and supporting armed struggle, and this is very similar to the trials that Nelson Mandela was involved in, and he's about to be sentenced. And what I'm going to read you is her description, of course, of his testimony to the jury, to the judge, I should say, I'm not sure there is a jury, to the judge, essentially about that he's proud of what he's doing, and he's defiant as he's about to be sentenced. So this is now Nadine Gordimer, Berger's daughter. As at a service in church, the family took the first row in court. The aunt and female cousins wore hats. She had with her in her pocket the blue, lilac, and red paisley scarf she put on only when the court rose, as the judge entered, each day of the 217 days of her father's trial. All around, everywhere except the high ceiling where the fan propellers were still, there were faces. The well of the court was lined with bodies. Bodies shifted and surged on in the benches behind her, pushed up thigh against thigh. The walls were padded with standing policemen. He, her father, was led up from cells below the court into the well, an actor, savior, prize fighter, entering the realm of expectation that awaits him. He was, of course, more ordinary and mortal than the image of him, as he would be on this day had anticipated. A spike of hair stood away from his carefully brushed crown. Her hand went up to her own to smooth it for him. She saw that he saw his sister first, then the cousin, smiled at her, in remark of the family assembly, then deeply for herself. Lionel Berger and her father. He gave his address from the dock. She knew what he was going to say because the lawyers had worked with him on the material, and she herself had gone to the library to check a certain quotation he wanted. She heard him speaking aloud what she had read in his handwriting and the notes written in his cell. Nobody could stop him. The voice of Lionel Berger, her father, was being heard in public for the first time for 7 years and for the last time, bearing testimony once and for all. He spoke for an hour. When as a medical student, tormented not by the suffering I saw around me in hospitals, but by the subjugation and humiliation of human beings in daily life. I've seen around me all my life a subjugation and humiliation of live people in which, by my silence and political inactivity, I myself took part, with as little say or volition on the victim side as there was in the black cadavers, always in good supplies, on which I was learning the intricate wonder of the human body when I was a student. I found at last the solution to this terrifying contradiction, and this, of course, is Lionel Berger addressing the court. I had been aware of, since I was a schoolboy, expected to have nothing more troubling in my head than my position in the rugby team. I am talking of the contradiction that my people, the Afrikaner people, and the white people in general in our country, worship the God of justice and practice discrimination on grounds of the color of skin, profess the compassion of the Son of Man, and deny the humanity of the black people they live among. This contradiction that split the very foundations of my life, that was making it impossible for me to see myself as a man among men, with all that implies of consciousness and responsibility. In Marxism, I found it was analyzed in another way, as forces in conflict through economic laws. I saw that white Marxists worked side by side with blacks in an equality that meant taking on the meanest of tasks, tasks that incurred loss of income and social prestige, and the risk of arrest and imprisonment, as well as sharing policy making and leadership. I saw whites prepared to work under blacks. Here was the possible solution to injustice to be sought outside the awful fallibility in any self-professed morality. I knew. For as a great African leader, who was not a communist, has since said, the white man's moral standards in this country can only be judged by the extent to which he has condemned the majority of its population to serfdom and inferiority. The Marxist solution is based on the elimination of contradiction between the form of social control and the economy. My Boer ancestors, who trekked to found their agrarian republic, subjecting the indigenous people of tribal societies by the force of the musket against the Assegai, were now in their turn resisting the economic forces that made their feudalistic form of social control obsolete. The white man had built a society that tried to contain and justify the contradictions of capitalist means of production and feudalist social forms. The resulting devastation I, a privileged young white, had before my eyes since my birth. Black men, women, and children living in the miseries of insecurity, poverty, and degradation on the farms where I grew up, and the dark, satanic mills of the industry that brought their labor cheap and disqualified them by color from organizing themselves or taking part in the successive governments that decreed their lot as eternal inferiors if not slaves. A change of social control and compatibility with the change in methods of production, known in Marxist language as revolution. In this I saw the answer to the racialism that was destroying our country then, and believe me, is destroying it even more surely and systematically now. I could not turn away from that tragedy. I cannot now. I took up then the pursuit of the end to racialism and injustice that I've continued and shall continue as long as I live. I say with Luther, here I stand. Ich kann nicht anders. I'm reading from Nadine Gordimer's, Berger's daughter. This is the address to the judge and the public from her father, Lionel Berger. An hour and a half, nobody would dare stop him. I stand before this court, accused of acts calculated to overthrow the state and establish a dictatorship of the proletariat in this country. But what we as communists, black and white, working in harmony with others who do not share our political philosophy, have set our sights on is the national liberation of the African people, and thus the abolishment of discrimination and extension of political rights to all the peoples of this country. That alone has been our aim. Beyond, there are matters the future will settle. For nearly 30 years, the Communist Party aligned itself as a legal organization with the African struggle for black rights and the extension of the franchise to the black majority. When the Communist Party was declared a banned organization and later formed itself as an underground organization to which I belong, it continued for more than a decade to take part in the struggle for black advancement by peaceful and nonviolent means. At the end of that long, long haul, when the great mass movement of the African National Congress and other movements were outlawed, the ears of the government stopped finally against all pleas and demands. What advancement had been granted? What legitimate rights had been recognized according to the, quote, standards of Western civilization our white governments have declared themselves dedicated to preserve and perpetuate? Where had so much effort and patience beyond normal endurance found any sign of reasonable recognition of reasonable aspirations. And to this day, the black men who stand trial in this court, as I do, must ask themselves, why is it that no black man has ever had the right of answering before a black prosecutor, a black judge, to laws in which whose drafting and promulgation his own people, the blacks, have had a say? Not the squat, stern pantomime dame in a curly gray wig up on the bench. Nobody dared silence him. Not the policeman who had brought him in between them. Not the plainclothesman, as familiar as tradesmen coming to the house since she was a child. Lionel Berger goes on. That is my answer to this question this course has asked, and my fellow citizens may be asking of me, how can I, a doctor, sworn to save lives, approve the even accidental risk to human life contained in the sabotage of selected symbolic targets calculated not to harm people, the tactic to which the banned Congress leaders turned in the creation of Encontro Wisesui, the spear of the nation, turned to after 300 years of repression by white guns and laws, after half a century of white indifference to blacks' reasonably formulated, legitimate aspirations, the last resort short of certain bloodshed to which a desperate people turned as a means of drawing attention after everything else had been ignored. 1 hour and 47 minutes. My covenant is with the victims of apartheid. The situation in which I find myself changes nothing. There will always be those who cannot live with themselves at the expense of fullness of life for others. They know world history would be very easy to make if the struggle were taken up only on condition of infallibly favorable chances. This court has found me guilty on all counts. If I have ever been certain of anything in my life, is that I acted according to my conscience on all counts. I would be guilty only if I were innocent of working to destroy racism in my country. They heard him out, the words of the condemned man, and the last judgment on those who had condemned him. The judge learnedly and scrupulously impartial within the white man's law, the secret police and the uniform police who enforced them, the white people, his own people, who made the laws. The sentence was what our father knew was coming to him, and she and the lawyers and our father knew was coming to him, and everyone around them throughout the trial knew was coming. The newspaper reported a gasp throughout the court when the judge pronounced sentence of imprisonment for life. She did not hear any gasp. There was no split second when everything stopped, no breath, no heartbeat, no saliva, no flow of blood except her father's. Everything rushed away from him, drew back, eclipsed. He alone, in his short, big-headed body, and his neat, gray, best suit, gave off the heat of life. He held them all at bay, blinded, possessed. Then his eyes lowered. She distinctly noticed his eyelids drop, in an almost feminine gesture of self-conscious acknowledgement. She looked straight ahead because she was afraid someone would speak to her or lay a hand on her. At the back of the court, where the blacks were crushed in, standing. So when the seated whites turned up to look, they were overhung. The shouts flung out, Amandla! And the burst of response, Awetu! Amandla, Awetu! Amandla, Awetu! They fell upon her father, his flowers, laurels, and braces. He grinned blazingly and raised his fist to theirs. Then it was over. A thin back went down to the cells between many policemen. It was finished. The groupings dropped apart, lawyers, police, clerks, moving across each other. The plump, desperately calm face of her father's counsel, prematurely aged by jowls of tension round his gentle, rosy mouth, looked for her, and she struggled to get to him. He kissed her, and she sank for a moment into the cushion of that cheek, smelled something he put on when he shaved. A foreigner's British voice was saying past her ear, and here, life means life. Whew. Well, that was Nadine Gordimer and the amazing book, Berger's Daughter. It's why a lot of us are proud to be in the movement, to live up to those standards. It's the South African model of resistance, the black model of resistance, the enormous sacrifice that people have made for revolution. Because, and I wish I could get the quote better, but the only thing I don't want to be guilty of is innocent in not doing anything about things. So this is Eric Mann on Voices from the Frontlines. So one of the criticisms that I got was I shouldn't keep asking you to do so much that make the point and get out of it. But the thing is as an organizer, is that I don't in any way believe that you should harangue people and keep repeating KPFK 818-985-5735. But you have to ask people, I think what this listener, who I will read in full next week, doesn't understand is that we live in very passive times. We live where people are listening. They may think this is a wonderful show. I know they do, because we have a really amazing group of listeners. But, oh, do something about it. Come out of my own passive, consumeristic shell and actually realize this guy, Eric Mann, actually showed up at a studio, Crystal McMillan, and he worked out the program. They got the real numbers of the real people. He spent time reading books and thinking about, he wants me to do something. He wants me to call the Strategy Center at 213-387-2800. Last week, after I did the reading about Palestine, we got 14 people called. That's pretty incredible. And yes, I am going to write you all, guilt is a terrible thing. And then I've been getting emails at Eric at Voices from the Frontlines, and they've been very personal about who you are and what you're doing and what you want to do. And what I'm very struck by is we're really building an amazing listenership of people of all races, but significantly Black and Latino, a lot of women, people who want to do things, which is why they listen to Voices from the Frontlines and why they want to go up on our website, www.voicesfromthefrontlines.com. Today you could go up on the website and get more information about domestic violence and how we could play some small but important role in helping it. There'll be articles up there about Palestine. There'll be quotes and interviews from the 50th anniversary of Mississippi Summer. So trying to change the culture of even progressive left radio from entertainment to challenge is something I've been experimenting with increasingly for the last couple of years. And what I'm getting a sense of is people on the other end, the so-called listeners, actually like this. And we're starting to realize that this isn't a show. This is another form of organizing. And yeah, I'm trying to organize you. But as Barbara Lott Holland once said, organizing is a voluntary relationship among peers. I'm offering you stuff. If you don't want to do it, don't do it. But if you do, 213-387-2800. Call our office and tell people you want to get involved in some Strategy Center stuff. And again, send me an email at eric@voicesfromthefrontlines.com. So I want to thank all our listeners. I want to thank Federico, who's been an engineer for many years now at KPFK and has worked with us at the Strategy Center. I want to thank Nadine Gordimer for writing just a truly amazing book. And I'll see you next week. So take good care of yourself. I'll see you next Tuesday at 4. And I think it's that thing they used to say, all power to the people.